Support for FAQ City comes from WFAE members and Bojangles. For over 40 years, Charlotte-based Bojangles has provided biscuits from scratch, hand-breaded fried chicken, and freshly steeped iced tea. More info on the 48-step biscuit-making process at bojanglesbiscuits.com.
Well, the Queen City has reclaimed her crown as America's second-largest banking center. In case you missed the news, we recovered our number two spot from San Francisco last year, giving us another shot of self-esteem, given that Charlotte has so closely intertwined its identity with the banking industry. Well, coming up on today's episode, it's a special rebroadcast of how and why Charlotte got to be a banking behemoth. You can bank on an answer on FAQ City. It's FAQ City, the podcast from WFAE, where we take a new question every episode.
So many questions. So many questions.
And explain it here. I'm Nick Delacanel. Let's begin. Okay, so let's jump right into today's listener-submitted question.
My name is Chris from Charlotte. My question is, how did Charlotte become a major banking city?
Yeah, you know, if you think about it, a lot of cities have a thing that they're known for. Orlando has tourism, Nashville has music. It seems like Charlotte has always been defined by its banks. Well, Rick Rothacker can explain why. He's a reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and he's written a book titled Banktown: The Rise and Struggles of Charlotte's Big Banks. And he says this is something that he has wondered about himself.
I mean, when I was covering the banks, you kind of look around and see these banks everywhere, and you're like, you know, why did they get so big and grow up to dominate the country?
Right, and in Charlotte of all places, too.
Yeah.
Seems kind of random.
Exactly. You know, even if in North Carolina, you'd say, why not Raleigh, the state capital, or why not Atlanta, which is a bigger city in the southeast, or Miami? And so I think it is a good question.
So Rothacker writes in his book that there are a few ingredients that help transform us into the banking powerhouse that we are today. The first, he says, takes us way back to the early 1800s. This was pre-Civil War era, when our state had these favorable banking laws that many other states didn't have. And this was back when most of the country's banks were restricted to being small and local.
Back in those days, you had one branch per county, and the next county over was a different bank. And it was sort of set up, I think, to protect those banks. So everyone had their own territory. They didn't have competition. They were the local bank. North Carolina, the first private banks that were chartered were in 1804, and there was two of them. And kind of right off the bat, they were allowed to branch. So while banks in Georgia or Florida, there was a bunch of little tiny banks in North Carolina, they started getting bigger and bigger.
Those first two statewide banks were based in Cape Fear and New Bern, and they were doing pretty well. Now, of course, then the Civil War came along and basically wiped all the banks out. The whole economy, really, of the South. And so the bankers had to start again from square one, rebuilding from the ground up. And it was in the Civil War's aftermath that a small bank started up in Winston-Salem and quickly began growing into the state's largest. Its name was Wachovia. Meanwhile, Charlotte was becoming a boomtown around this time. The discovery of gold had brought in new residents, as well as new railroads and a booming textile industry. And then in 1927, the city got a huge boost when the Federal Reserve decided to build a branch here. And I guess this was like another ingredient, so to speak.
Yeah, that kind of helped put Charlotte on the map. And it's funny, when I was doing research for the book, I was looking through old newspaper articles and things like that. And it was really kind of fun to read because it was kind of a competition to see where this Federal Reserve branch was going to be.
Huh.
And like when they won it, people were saying, hot dog, way to go, you got it. It was like the same kind of stuff you'd see now where, you know, the chamber CEO would say, this is a big moment for Charlotte. You know, now we're on the map and have a new NBA team or whatever.
Of course, that was followed by the Great Depression. Again, the industry suffered major setbacks, but it managed to hang on, barely. And when the country emerged in the early 40s, what do you think happened then? The North Carolina banks were right back at it, gobbling up smaller banks in the state and growing bigger each year. There were two Charlotte banks that were emerging during this time, North Carolina National Bank, or NCNB, headed by Hugh McCall Jr., and First Union National Bank, headed by Ed Crutchfield. They were both from the Carolinas, both Southerners, and both believed strongly in improving the city of Charlotte. they also fought incessantly over who could win the most assets and even who could build the tallest office tower. And Rothacker says that cutthroat competition could be the third major ingredient, because it spurred what happened next in the 1980s when things really got fired up.
Yeah, right now the banks are, they're just growing within North Carolina, and they're kind of bursting at the seams trying to figure out how to get out of the state. And it's kind of an issue around the country. And the NCNB, which is the predecessor of Bank of America, sort of finds the first loophole.
It was this loophole that would eventually open the floodgates and form the basic foundation of interstate banking, not to mention propel Humacol's bank to the top. We'll get to it right after this short break.
Support for FAQ City comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru Gastonia, featuring the new Outback with EyeSight safety technology that sees problems and initiates action to help avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com and on Facebook at Tyndall Subaru.
Hey guys, if you don't know already, it is Pledge Week at WFAE. This is when we ask you to reflect on all the engaging, important, and thoughtful work that comes out of this station, not just on podcasts like this one, but also by way of our daily news coverage and the international and national news you hear every day from NPR. If you value this style of journalism, if it helps you feel connected to your community, then I hope you'll take a minute and become a listener contributor to WFAE today. Go online and hit the donate button at WFAE.org, and thanks for your support. Okay, we're back, and looking at the loophole that Humacol used to buy a bank in Florida. Now, banks were not allowed to expand across state lines, right? But NCNB already owned a trust company in Florida, and Humacol and his advisors thought maybe they could use that to legitimize the purchase.
And they did, and it was sort of upheld by the legislature at the time, and suddenly, you know, NCNB had kind of snuck their way into Florida.
After this, Southern states started passing laws allowing interstate banking, and in 1994, President Bill Clinton signed a law opening up interstate banking across the nation. That set off what Rothacker describes as a nationwide buying binge. By 1997, Charlotte had secured its spot as the nation's second largest banking center behind New York. And to answer the question, it was mostly due to those loose banking laws and the Federal Reserve, which gave us an early boost that other states and cities didn't have, and the ambitious, competitive, sometimes brazen leadership of the local banks, personified by the later headline-grabbing mergers of Nations Bank and Bank America and of First Union and Wachovia. Of course, since then, it hasn't been all peaches and cream. Remember the 2008 financial crisis with the government bailouts, the crash of Wachovia, which was then bought by Wells Fargo on the West Coast. But Rothacker says that's not to diminish the incredible feat it took for us to get to number two in the first place.
I mean, you look at the arc of the banks in North Carolina, we were going up and up and up. We were kind of the scrappy Southerner who took on Wall Street, even earlier in 2008, when Bank of America bought Merrill Lynch, there was sort of some crowing around town that, hey, the Charlotte bank from Tryon Street had taken over, you know, one of Wall Street's biggest banks. So for a brief moment, we'd really kind of stuck it to New York.
But where are we now? Well, in recent years, we've lost our number two spot to San Francisco. And even though we still have more jobs in the finance industry and insurance sector than before the crash, city leaders have been trying to cast us as more than just a banking town of late. And that has me wondering. I mean, Charlotte has reinvented itself in the past. You know, before we were a banking industry, we were a textile town. And before that, we were known for gold mining and stuff. Do you think we might be headed towards another reinvention?
I think there's efforts to diversify. You know, they've talked a lot about making us an energy hub. There's a lot of professional services here. I think the fact that the city did make it through the recession and, you know, are still attracting some other financial services jobs, it did show that it's a pretty resilient city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it for this week. Special thanks to Rick Rothacker. You can check out his book, Banktown, The Rise and Struggles of Charlotte's Big Banks, for more on this. And if you'd like to invest in some more Charlotte knowledge, check out our past FAQ City episodes. I'm sorry, I really couldn't come up with a better pun than that. Those episodes are on iTunes, Google Play, the NPR One app, and WFAE.org. And that's also where you can deposit your own questions, there we go, about any topic you've been wondering about. Again, submit your question at WFAE.org/FAQCity, and who knows, we may just find an answer on an upcoming episode. Until next time, I'm Nick Delacnow.
Support for FAQ City comes from WFAE members and Bojangles. For over 40 years, Charlotte-based Bojangles has provided biscuits from scratch, hand-breaded fried chicken, and freshly steeped iced tea. More info on the 48-step biscuit-making process at BojanglesBiscuits.com.